right. We're holding on min bays, armored bays, about a little bit above the middle of the armored line against Nami. Okay. We're in the middle of discussing, we're towards the end of discussing the Sugya about a tumtum. We said in our mission, and we mentioned the case, we have an animal that's supposed to be a bechor, but it's a tumtum or an androgynous. What the din is with it? We had Rav Chista saying that everybody would agree, everybody meaning all the Tanoim in the Mishnah at least, would agree that a tumtum is considered a sophic, and therefore it's a sophic bechor, and you can't work with it, etc. Whereas an androgynous, then you have the different opinions in the Mishnah, is it considered a sophic, is it considered a sophic bechor, or is it a vadai, not a bechor, and you're even allowed to work with it, etc. The last thing we said was we mentioned also a braisa where we had an additional opinion of Rav Shimon ben Yehuda in the name of Rav Shimon, who said that a tumtum is not a bechor either. So we said one possibility we thought is we wanted to say maybe that he would hold that in fact a tumtum is considered definitely a beria, is considered a different gender, not male, not female, therefore it wouldn't have the dinim of bechor. We said that maybe not, actually, maybe all it is, it's the distinction, where does this tumtum, this animal, the tumtum urinate from? Does it, if it urinates from the area where a male would, then for sure we know it's a male somewhere under the covering over there. If not, it might be a female, but it might also be that its organ is turned backwards, and therefore that it would be a male after all. So we mentioned in that connection that there was a case where of a lozer.
Let me ask you a question. I thought about that, and then I thought, look, it's already a tumtum. It has major malformation. How can we infer from the way the urine comes out that it's a male or a female?
That's actually, the Gemara is going to take that up soon. Wait. We'll get to that in a few lines. But anyway, okay, so we said that Rabbi Lozer, or Rabbi Loi, different Yosais over here, one time actually paskin, where you had an animal like that was supposed to be a bechor, but it was urinating the way a female does, and he declared it to be cholin, which Rabbi Yochanan was wondering, how could he do that? How could he ignore two opinions in our Mishnah, the first two opinions, the Tanakhama and Rabbi Shmuel, and go only according to the last chacham? That's where we're holding. Line begins Nami here, just above the middle of the Amud. Okay, so for Rabbi Lozer, so what would Rabbi Lozer, so Rabbi Loi, what would he say? Why indeed? The Gersa that we have in front of us is Rabbi Lozer, but Rashi's Gersa is Rabbi Loi. One thing is, because if we're saying that Rabbi Yochanan disagreed with it, if it's Rabbi Lozer, Rabbi Lozer was a Talmud of Rabbi Yochanan, he wouldn't be going against his Rebbe. Whereas Rabbi Loi is not a student of Rabbi Yochanan, okay, possible, but anyway, okay, whatever, you have different gifts. So the question is, Rabbi Lozer or Rabbi Loi, command Savara, okay, so who does Rabbi Loi or Rabbi Lozer go according to? Doesn't Rabbi Yochanan have a point? How is he setting aside two opinions in the Mishnah in favor of only one? So the answer is, Kihadu Amr Shlokish. Yeah, the Gemara is asking. Because the Gemara is asking, Rabbi Lozer, command Savara. Whose Savara was Rabbi Lozer following? That's the question. And the answer is, Kihadu Amr Shlokish. He was following what Rish Lakish says. That Rish Lakish said, there's a difference when it comes to a tumtum between an animal and a person. Loi Amru tumtum sofik el ba'adam. Rish Lakish says, this whole concept that we've been saying, that according to the Chista in particular, that we've been saying that a tumtum is a sofik, that only applies to a human being. When you have a human being, that's a tumtum, and therefore, as we learned yesterday, you're not sure if they're a male or a female, and that has relevance as far as the genome of Erchin and various other cases. Fine, the difference is, the reason why you have a sofik by a person, because after all, whether it's a male or a female, they urinate from approximately the same place on the body, therefore, if that area is covered up with flesh, you can't really tell easily whether it's a male or a female. Aval behema, but Rish Lakish says when it comes to a behema, there's really no suffix. Mato mayim amakam zacharis zachar, if it urinates from under the body where the male organ is on a male, then we know it's a male. Mato mayim amakam nachvus nekeva, and if it urinates from the back of the body where the female does, no, we're talking about a tumtum. Rish Lakish is saying, forget about this idea that we said before, that maybe there is a male organ over there, but it's turned backwards. It points towards the back of the body and not the front. No, Rish Lakish says, never mind that. By behema, given that you have that normal difference between a zohar and a keva, where they urinate from, unlike with human beings where you don't really have that distinction, because when you think about it, by an animal, no, not as much really, because the difference is, by an animal walks on all fours and its male organ, if it has one, points forward. It's under the prepuce, and it points forward toward the front of the body. As opposed to a human being walks on two, where walks on two legs, and if it's a male, it's fine. The male organ sticks out of the body a little bit, but it basically hangs down. So then a female also, her urethra is also pointing more or less, it's in front and then somewhat down. So you have, it's covered fine, but they're still much closer together. You don't have, by a human being, you don't have that their organ sticks up and then extends upward with the body the way it does with an animal. So therefore, as Schlocker says, only with a human being do you have a suffix, and you can't resolve it based on where they urinate from. But with an animal, you have no such suffix. If it urinates the way a male does, then we know it's a male. B'makom nachlus nekeva. If it urinates the place where a female does, then we know it's a female. So therefore, Sir Rabbi Loi, Rabbi Elazar was following that shita when he passed in that this animal is not a b'chor. So the question is, Maskis Lot of Oshia. So Rabbi Oshia asks, still, how can your Shlokish say that as a blanket statement? Don't we said before, don't you have the problem that the male organ of this animal may have been turned backwards and is pointing towards the back of the animal rather than the front? And then therefore so it's urinating from the back, but and therefore it seems to be a female, but really it's a male. So he answered him. Abaya says, Shitim Kubetta says, what do you mean? Who are you asking? Like, come on, could a mayor decide the miota? Who are you asking the question to? According to only according to the mayor, who's concerned even about the miot. The Chachamim in general, when we've had a number of times already that Reb Meir, we had earlier in Augusta, in fact, that Reb Meir holds that when you have the majority of people or animals have a certain way of being, have a certain body structure or whatever, but you have a miyot that not, Reb Meir is concerned about that. We learned that back at the beginning of the third parak in connection with animals giving birth versus miscarrying. We said that Reb Meir, the original place Reb Meir said that is as far as a katan or a katana during yibum, where it might turn out that there's suschamer and ilonis and infertile, that they're going to grow up to be infertile. So Reb Meir is concerned about the miut. But it's only a miut of animals that, even among the tumtumim, in other words, it's only a miut that you have this kind of thing where the organ is turned backwards. So what are you asking according to the mayor? A mayor is a dafya. Your shlokish doesn't have to follow that opinion.
Well, the tumtum is also a miut.
Fine, but you have a miut in front of you, but within that, you're going to say a miut of those have the organ turned backwards according to the mayor. That would only be according to the mayor. You need to be worried about that. So what's the question?
Right.
However, Abaya bar Oven, Rav Chananya bar Oven, Adami Tavayo. However, Abaya bar Oven, Rav Chananya bar Oven together.
Right. Yeah.
Answer the question. That no, the question is not only according to the mayor, Afilu Tamei Rabbanan. The question is actually valid according to the Rabbanan as well, even though they say we're not concerned about the miut. But the fact is, similar to what you said, Hayova Ishtini Ishtini. Once already the animal has a distinction from the usual, that it's a tumtum, which itself is not a usual thing, then there may very well be another difference over there that the organ was turned backwards. So therefore, so the question is,
when you say turn back,
in other words, like this, you normally have it points forward.
Yeah, it could have been placed.
And like this, in other words, it could be pointing backwards, exactly. So that's that's the question. In other words, so the question is still valid. Why? Just because this animal urinates from the back, how do we know? Maybe nef chazakos. Well, the answer is. Okay, well, you have the fact is, you have different opinions on that. You have opinions that say this idea, once you have a difference in the fact that it's a tum-tum, which already is not normal, then already you have reason to be concerned that it's maybe nef-chazakrutze v'nachlutze, and that is why, therefore, the Tanakama in the previous braisa that we brought before will say that regardless, that even if it urinates from the female place, it still might be a male. And then you have another opinion. You have the opinion of Rav Shimon ben Yehuda, who says we're not concerned about that. So fine, Rish Lakish can be following that opinion, and Rav Loi or Rav Elazar could be following that in turn. Okay. So the question is, now that we're saying implicitly, we're saying implicitly you have this concept that some Tanoim hold that given the ishtini that once you have it different as far as being a tumtum, it may also be different as far as nefchazakuse, and others that say that not, but we don't have it explicit. So the question is lema ishtini v'lo ishtini Tanoim. Should we say that there's actually a more explicit machlokas Tanoim on the subject when you have someone who's already different, a person in this case we're talking about, who's different in being a tumtum, is there more reason to think that there's something else unusual in them also?
regardless of the Meir, Reb Meir would hold by Shlemi Yotzer?
Reb Meir would hold Chaya Shlemi Yotzer. Reb Meir would be saying that, in general, you have to be concerned there is the Miyot, even if we're going to say that most animals that are tumtums are not, or do not have the Aver pointing backwards, but you have the minority that does. Reb Meir would be concerned about that. But even the Chachamim, they would say it's not a matter of a minority. Within the number of tumtums, which may be fine, the tumtums themselves are only 1% of animals, fine, normally we wouldn't have to be worried about that, but the fact is we have one of those 1% among us, but there's high reason to think that the Chachamim are going to say that among that 1%, a high percentage within that, are going to have nefkazachusa the nefkazachusa of the ones that are biologically male. And Rosh Hashim Ben Yehuda is not concerned about that. Okay. So should we say there's an actual more explicit machloika thundering about it? The Tanya, we learn in a Braisa, tumtum shekiddush. Now let's turn to a human tumtum. So if a tumtum is mekadesh a woman, kiddush of kiddushin, so the kiddushin is valid kiddushin b'chumra, because after all, he might be a male. If it was a female, obviously, then it's not a valid kiddushin, but it's a 50-50 chance. You don't know.
Why is it valid if you don't know?
Because you don't know, because mesafek, because he might be a male, and then therefore this woman that he was mekadesh is actually married to him. Nitzkadish, and similarly, if a tumtum receives kiddushin from a man, also kiddushin for the same reason, the kiddushin or kiddushin, because we don't know, she might be a woman. And what happens if you have a tumtum, also a tumtum would have to do chalitza l'chumra, meaning, as Rashi says, if you have, so you have two brothers, you have Reuben and Shimon. Reuben dies childless. He only has one brother, Shimon, who is a tumtum, who we don't know even therefore the brother or not. So therefore, he's the only one able to do chalitza or yibum. So he has to do chalitza because maybe after all, Shimon is a male. And if he is, then the yivama can't marry anybody else without chalitza. The chot in the ishtoi, and vice versa, if the tumtum dies childless, which normally I guess he will be because he can't have children, then you do chalitza for his wife, same thing. And you also do yibum for his wife, and there it is. There Rashi says it's mamonifshas. Either way, if this tumtum who died was a male, then fine, you do yibum like you're supposed to. If it was a female, then okay, his wife, quote unquote, wasn't married to him anyway because he himself was actually a woman under there, and therefore okay, there's no yibum anyway. His brother is just marrying a woman. So therefore, so that's one b'raisa. The Tanya Idoch, now another b'raisa says, Eishes tumtum cheletes v'loimis yabemis. Another b'raisa says that no, the wife of a tumtum can only do chalitza, she cannot do yibum. Now, so we have two b'raisas that argue with each other. One says that you could do yibum to his wife, and the other one says you can't. Now, what would be the argument? What would be the underlying argument? Svarua, now for purposes of the discussion, we assume that both brises, the Kula Alma Kerabakiva, let's assume for purposes of discussion that both brises agree with the opinion of Rabakiva, where Rabakiva says in Yevamos that a Sris Chama, Rabakiva says in Yevamos that a Sris Chama is not subject to the dinim of Chalitza or Yibum. A Sris Chama is somebody who was born congenitally that he's never gonna physically mature. In Yevamos, the Gemara has a half dozen simonim where in modern terms it probably means that he has two little testosterone, whatever it is, but whatever the simonim over there are, he never develops pubic hair, he never develops a beard.
He has no male organs.
He has male organs. A Sris Chama has male organs. A Sris Chama has male organs, but he's infertile. He's infertile because he's not producing enough testosterone or whatever. The simonim that the Gemara mentions over there include, for example, he never grows pubic hair, he never grows a beard, his skin remains soft, his voice remains high, etc. So that, it sounds like something like that. It basically doesn't go through puberty, right? So what happens is actually what we, in general, yeah.
So if he has male organs,
No, so one second. So here he's not a tumtum. We're discussing the tumtum. We're digressing a second to talking about the Sris Chama, and then we're going to return to that. The point is, because the point is, in other words, okay, so one second. Okay, so like this. We have to distinguish. A tumtum is, he has no visible genitals at all, neither male nor female. A Sris Chama has visible genitals. He has visible organ and testicles, male ones, but his body is insensitivity or low testosterone or whatever it is. Yeah, so therefore he remains pre-pubertal, right? So, Rabbi Akiva holds. Now, on the other hand, you have another kind of Swiss called Swiss Adam, which is where a person was castrated or sterilized. One second. Okay, so, but there's a difference. Rabbi Akiva holds like this. When it comes to a Swiss Adam, Rabbi Akiva says, Chalitza and Yibum is relevant. Because he had Shasa Kosher, there was a time in his life when he was able to develop normally. On the other hand, a Swiss Chama is somebody who never was able to develop normally, therefore he's out of the picture as far as Chalitza and Yibum. Now, Rabbi Eliezer in the Gemara there, in Yevamos, argues and says the other way around. A Swiss Adam, he says, there's no curing him. Once he was sterilized, then there's no taking that back. As opposed to a Swiss Chama, Rabbi Eliezer says there in the Gemara and Yevamos, they have expert doctors in some places, he mentions Alexandria, who are able to cure such a person, maybe by giving him injections of testosterone, I don't know, whatever it is exactly. So there exists a cure for him. So therefore, Rabbi Eliezer says the other way around. A Swiss Adam doesn't do Chalitza or Yibum, and that Chalitza or Yibum doesn't have to be done for his wife, but a Swiss Adam, yes. Let's assume, though, for purposes of discussion, that both of these brises agree with Rabbi Akiva. Da'amah Swiss Chama lecholitz v'lemiyabim. Who says that a Swiss Chama does not do Chalitza and does not do Yibum? He's completely out of the picture as far as Chalitza and Yibum. Because he can never have children, and he was born that way, congenitally, that he's never going to mature. Well, in that case, my lab v'hokamifagi. So now we should say that the two brises that we hear about the Tum Tum are arguing about the point like this. Demand on Macholas Macholtan the Ishtar, Miyabnes Ishtar. The first Braisa that said that he does do Chalitza, and Chalitza has to be done for his wife, and he could do Yibum, he would say, Loyamun and Hoyover Ishtar Ishtar. That first Braisa would take the view, okay, he's different as far as being a Tumtum. That doesn't necessarily mean that he's also different as far as being a Swiss Chama. We don't say just because he's different in one thing makes him necessarily different in the other.
Which other thing?
That of being a Swiss Chama.
And
we don't assume, we were just discussing before the question, do we say by an animal that's a tumtum, so here also we're saying, we could take the view that the first braisa could be taking the view, fine, the guy is a tumtum, that puts him in the minority of males, or the minority of people in general. Within that, though, we're not going to assume automatically that because of that, even if we were to find there were male organs over there, that he's also going to be a Swiss Chama, we're not going to assume that. Therefore, Chalitza and Yibum are still relevant to him. Therefore, he can do Yibum has to be done for his wife, and therefore Chalitza or Chalitza would have to be done for his wife. Because we don't assume that he's necessarily a Swiss Chama. Yes, he's a Tumtum, so there's 50-50 chance he's a male or a female. But on the chance that he's a male, then Chalitza has to be done or Yibum has to be done. He's not necessarily a Swiss Chama. Therefore, yes. And on the other hand, where the second braisa that says that his wife has to have chalitza, not yibum, would say, he would say, yes, but you also have a good chance that once you find that he's a tumtum, which already is a minority, then maybe he also is among the minority that are Swiss Chama. And if he's a Swiss Chama, his brother is not allowed to do yibum with his wife. Because, as we learned back in Yevamos, there's no middle ground when it comes to Yibum. Either you're doing a mitzvah of Yibum, or he's doing an Aveda, which is Chayev Kodesh, marrying his brother's wife when there's no mitzvah. So therefore, the only choice is to do Chalitza, just to be on the safe side, but not Yibum.
Let's say the Chris Chama, why he shouldn't do Chalitza?
Because we're talking about having Chalitza or Yibum done for his wife. Because him also doing Chalitza. Because if he's a Swiss Chama, according to Rabbi Akiva, he's completely out of the picture as far as Chalitza and as far as Yibum.
Because
that's how Rabbi Akiva learns that a Swiss Chama is loy hoy loy shasa kosher. He never had a time in his life when he was going to be normal as far as being able to mature to reach puberty. Therefore, Rabbi Akiva says he's out of the picture as far as Chalitza and Yibum. So now let's consider. Here we have a case. Let's forget a tumtum for a second. Let's talk a regular Swiss Chama. You have two brothers, Reuven and Shimon. Or actually, let's say you have two brothers, Reuven and Shimon. Forget a tumtum for a second. Let's focus on the Swiss Chama, then we'll explain how it relates to tumtum. Suppose you have two brothers, Reuven and Shimon. Reuven is a Swiss Chama, Shimon is not. Now, if Reuven and Shimon is married and then he dies, can Shimon do Yibum with Reuven's wife? According to Rabbi Akiva, no. If Shimon were to marry that woman, he would be over on Issur Karis, because this is his brother's wife, and there's no mitzvah of Yibum over there.
And that's because?
Because there's no mitzvah of Yibum when the deceased is a Swiss Chama, according to Rabbi Akiva.
But there was a mitzvah of getting married?
He had a mitzvah to get married, fine, because a man has a mitzvah to get married. But there's no.
Well,
because according to Rabbi Akiva, there's no myth, because the whole point of Yibum is Lahakim La'achu is Lahimacha Shmoy Yisrael. His name shouldn't be erased from the Jewish people. Like this, his name is in effect erased anyway because he's going to die childless because he's Shishkama. Therefore, Rabbi Akiva holds that there's no such thing as Yibum with his wife. And Chalitza in that case wouldn't be necessary either. Now we have, that's the point. Now, if we say, now we're talking about a tumtum over here. If we were to say that there's a good chance that aside from being a tumtum, which itself means there's a suffix whether he's a male or a female, if on top of that we say, being that he's already a tumtum and he has a change from the way his body should usually develop, are we going to assume that maybe he might also, even if he turns out to be a male, be a shirchama, then according to Rabbi Akiva, it would be also to do yibum with his wife. That would be the second brisa that would say that you can't do yibum with his wife. So you do chalitza to be on the safe side, because suppose he's a tumtum and means that he's a male and a fertile male, not a shirchama, then his wife would need chalitza in order to be able to marry somebody else. So therefore, you need chalitza just to be on the safe side. If he's a tumtum but not a shirchama. And remember, you have three possibilities. He could be, as a tumtum, he could be a male or a female, and within a male, he could be a normal male, or he could be a shirchama. So because there's a possibility that he's a male and a normal male, then you have to do chalitza on the safe side. But you can't do yibum because it might be that then his brother is going to be Oiran and Issacharis, according to Rabbi Akiva. Whereas the first brice that would take the view, we don't say Hayova Ishni Ishni, just because the guy is a tumtum doesn't automatically give us any reason to think that he's a shirchama any more than anybody else. Therefore, go ahead and be miyab and his wife. The only question is if he was a male or a female. If he's a male, then you do Yibum with his wife the normal way. If he was a female, he was never married in the first place, and then fine, that doesn't matter.
One second, can a tumtum be also a shirchama at the same time?
It could be, that's what we're saying. It's possible, but the first brisa would be taking the view that not necessarily because he's a tumtum should we also assume that even if he turns out to be a male, he's a shirchama. And the second brisa would be saying that he might, that there's a good chance. That's a message.
So the second brisa would go...
Would say, Hoyover Ishtini Ishtini. Once there's already a change in him and being a chum-chum, there's a higher likelihood that he's also a shirchama. And the first brisa would say that not. So if we say that, then we see it's a machloka tanai. The Gemara says, though, loy, no, not necessarily is that the argument between the brises. Gekula amra amin and Hoyover Ishtini Ishtini. Maybe both brises agree with that basic concept, that a Hoyover Ishtini Ishtini, once he's a tumtum, there's a higher than normal likelihood that he is a shirchama, which applying that to the case of the animal would mean that whether it urinates like a male or a female, it's possible that it is a male after all. Why are the two brises arguing? Harav Eliezer, Harav Akiva. Very simple. One brise is according to Harav Eliezer, who says that a Swiss chama does do chalitza, that chalitza and yibum are relevant to him because they can heal him, they can take him to Alexandria, Shomitzrayim, and heal him. Whatever, they give him testosterone injections. I don't know. Whatever they had expert scientists and doctors there. And Harav Akiva, the second brise would be according to Harav Akiva. So they might both agree. Harav Ishtanishin. Okay. So now the question becomes, Uman Tana So it's not a question of Hayov Ishtini Ishtini. They might both agree, but they might both agree on that basic concept. Right. Rabbi Eliezer says there could be a cure. Therefore, because there could be a cure, therefore, even before he's cured, therefore his wife still needs Yibum Uchalitza, whereas Rabbi Akiva says that not. Okay. Fine. So the question now is, Uman Tana... Okay. Uman Tana Libud Rabbi Akiva. Okay, so now you have to ask the Tana of the second Brisa. If you're going to say the second Brisa goes according to Rabbi Akiva, which Tana would that be who follows Rabbi Akiva's opinion and says that his wife needs Chalitza to be on the safe side but not Yibum? Elamer of Yehuda, would you say that it is Rabbi Yehuda's opinion? Can't. Halvade Swiss Mishavilei. Rabbi Yehuda holds that a tumtum automatically is considered a shirchama. Ditznan, as we learn in a Mishnah, it's actually a Braisa. It is a Mishnah in Yevamos. Ditznan, we learn in a Mishnah in Yevamos. Rabbi Yehuda, I'm a tumtum shenikra v'nimtza zachar. Rabbi Yehuda says that if you eventually you tear open this membrane that's covering the genitals and by a tumtum and you find him to be a male, hareza lo yachlos, he still should not do chalitza, mipneshu kisoris, because he is like a soris. So in other words, Rabbi Yehuda considers him to be a Swiss grammar. So So why would the Braisa that we just quoted before, why would it be saying, if it went according to Rabbi Yehuda, why would it be saying that his wife needs Chalitza or Yibum? If we say that he's a Sardis, then according to Rabbi Akiva, he's out of the picture as far as Chalitza and Yibum. So we have to say, rather that Braisa would be according to the opinion of Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda. Instead of Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda. The Tanya, I could be, I guess. Detanya, Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda, Tumtum loy chalit. He says like this, a tumtum should not do chalitza, shema yikara v'yimsa Swiss kama, because you might end up tearing open the membrane and then finding that after all he's a Swiss kama. Now, Rashi points out, we're talking over here in the case where there are other brothers. If there's no other brother, then it doesn't really matter, because if he turns out to be a Swiss Chama, then anyway there's no Chalitza or Yibum, because there's no other brother who is relevant to Chalitza and Yibum. And if he wasn't a Swiss Chama, then fine, it was a valid Chalitza. So if he's the only other brother, if he's only the only surviving brother, there's no problem with him doing Chalitza, or if he's doing Chalitza as the case may be. The problem would be, if there are other brothers, he's going to do a Chalitza, it might turn out it was or wasn't a valid Chalitza. So the Gemara says, what do you mean, Shemi Yikara V'yimta Swiss Chama? Author called the Mikra Zocha Mishtakach, the Teva Loi Mishtakach. What do you mean? And if you tear open the membrane on a tumtum, do you necessarily find that it's a male? What do you mean? You're saying Shema, that you might find that he's Swiss Chama, implying you know for sure he's a male, and the only question is he fertile or not? No. The answer is Shema Chama. No, you're right. Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yehuda is saying a Shema, or actually Shema V'Shema Chama. Shitim Akubasa says he's mentioning a double doubt. First of all, Shema Yikara V'Nimtza Nekeva. First of all, you might tear it open and find that Bechlal, he's a female, and then in that case, what's he doing Chalitza? Yeah. Inami, Zohar, Nami, or even if you find after all that he's a male, Shema Yimotis, Swiss Chama, then you might find that he's a Swiss Chama. So Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yehuda is the one who's saying that we consider it a doubt whether he said, unlike Rabbi Yehuda, who says that a tumtum is assumed to be a Swiss Chama, Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yehuda doesn't agree with that. He says maybe he is, maybe he's not. Okay, so the question is, my benayu. Okay, but what's the practical difference? Both Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yehuda are saying that the tumtum shouldn't do chalitza. So what's the practical difference between them? First of all, you have like this. Suppose there are other brothers, normal brothers who are not tumtum, not Swiss Chama, not nothing. This one goes and does chalitza. According to Rabbi Yehuda, we would say he's definitely a Swiss, even if he turns out to be a male, he's definitely a Swiss Chama. Therefore, his chalitza is nothing. And therefore, any of the other brothers could still do Yibum, could still do Yibum with her if they want. We learned back in Yevamos that if one brother does chalitza with her, she's also to marry any of the other brothers. So Rabbi Yehuda over here, who's saying that, Rabbi Yehuda is saying there's basically only two possibilities. Either this tumtum is a female, in which case the chalitza is nothing anyway, or it's a male, but in that case he's a Swiss Chama of necessity, then also his chalitza is nothing, according to Rabbi Akiva, that a Swiss Chama doesn't do chalitza. So according to Rabbi Yehuda, there's no problem if he does chalitza, and any of the other normal brothers could still marry her. As opposed to, according to Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yehuda, that it's a suffix, that there's three possibilities. He might be a female, he might be a male, not a Swiss Chama, he might be a male, a Swiss Chama, and if he is a male and not a Swiss Chama, his chalitza is valid, then it would pass all the other brothers from doing Yibum with her. That's one Nafkamina. And the second one, V'lachlitz, Shaloi B'makam Achin, the other question would be, what if there are no other brothers, should he be doing chalitza? Again, according to Rabbi Yehuda, you don't need to do chalitza in that case, because he's definitely either a female or a Swiss Chama, and both those, there's no Yibum or chalitza is relevant. Therefore, the widow can go marry whoever she wants.
But
he goes like Rabbi Akiva, right, but a Swiss Chama is excluded, right.
So therefore,
according to him, there's no harm in the guy doing chalitza because there's no harm in him. You don't need to do chalitza. Either he's a female or he's a Swiss Chama. Neither one needs to do chalitza. So therefore, that. On the other hand, according to Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yehuda, you would have to do chalitza because after all, maybe he's not a sorry. So Ikabenayu, those are the two Nachminis between Rabbi Yehuda's treatment. Because according to him, there's three possibilities, and one of those possibilities is that he does have to do chalitza to make her mutter to marry somebody.
What's the halacha?
The halacha is like that. The halacha is like Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda, I believe. That not necessarily is a tumtum, a Swiss Chama, and therefore he would have to do chalitza to be on the safe side.
So today, is there such a thing as tourism?
It could be, I suppose. I mean, I don't know. I guess nowadays they have, I guess nowadays if a baby is born with indeterminate genitals, I guess they could more easily do an operation to uncover it and see what's there, but I'm not.
So that's what a tumtum is?
That's what a tumtum is. It's basically internal or covered up or whatever, yeah.
Covered up.
Yeah, whatever, okay. Yeah. Okay. Hadron alaha leva mumim. Okay. So now that we've talked about mumim of animals, now we're going to talk about mumim of people. I mentioned you asked the other day, I mentioned it's relevant to Koyanim. You were asking, is it relevant to anybody else? I mentioned it is. You have Silvus that talks about a woman who has these mumim, who has any of these mumim, where the husband can argue if he didn't know about them before that it was a mechatzos. I found, actually, since then, that there are actually other nafkaminis in it also. In particular, the Maharil writes that edim on a get should not be bali mumim. Why that is, there's a lot of discussion among the well, no, basically he said I think he said any mum. Maybe he doesn't mean like minor mumim like that. Maybe he means more the major ones. But anyway, the Maharil says that, and a lot of Rishonim and Achronim argue and discuss why exactly that should be so. But nevertheless, we try to be careful with that if we can. Also, they say a similar thing as far as the Dayanim for Chalitza that we were just talking about. Also, because there's a concept that Dayanim should not have a mum. The Gemara mentions the Sanhedrin. Primarily, it's talking about over there Dayanim on the Sanhedrin, but to a lesser extent, it applies to other kinds of dayanim as well, because to a lesser extent, at least, I mean, in particular, there's the idea by Chalitza that they shouldn't be blind even in one eye because they have to see the whole thing. But they generalize from that they shouldn't have other kinds of mumim as well. Then the Maharil uses an expression. He says that it's not right that you should be matur and eshes ish to marry anybody based on a baal mum. And that's the expression he uses. Okay, so there is that nafkamina as well, as far as the mumim that we discussed in the previous perek and that we're going to discuss in our perek. And yeah, I mean, there is also, as far as being able to sit on the Sanhedrin. They say a famous thing when Moshe Feinstein was old, when he was in his late 80s, early 90s, whatever, they had to put in a pacemaker, and he was sitting and then discussing with his son-in-law, Tendler, would this make him a baal mum? If Mashiach comes in his lifetime and he's going to be a member of the Sanhedrin, which he is well qualified to be, would he be a baal mum and therefore also to sit on a Sanhedrin? So
it's not a baal mum rock. You have to see it.
Well, so that was what they were discussing. Is there any external thing of it that would make him that would be considered a baal mum? Yeah. Okay, so that's going to be the subject of our parak, is mumim that apply to human beings. So we're going to have, basically, as the Gemara is going to say, most of the mumim we learned in the previous parak apply to human beings as well, whichever ones are relevant, obviously not ones involving hooves or tails or whatever. But and then we're going to have a bunch more in our parak. Basically,
did he render any halachic decision?
I'm not particular detail. I don't know. I know he discussed it with his son-in-law, but I don't know what conclusion.
Could
they
he halachically?
What?
Render an halachic decision.
About that, I mean, it would be Hochsul Mashiach. I mean, it would be the kind of thing when Mashiach comes. But yeah, okay. But he was discussing that thing. So that I'm. It's a well-known thing. You can find it in biographies of Rabbi Moshe. You can find the actual tshuva someplace in Igros Moshe where he discusses it. Yeah. Okay. So that I'm summarizes it as follows. Before we begin, so basically what it is like this. That I'm says there are 50 mumim that human beings and animals have in common. Then you have another 23 that apply to animals only. And you have another 90 that apply to human beings only. So altogether, you have 73 mumim that are relevant to animals and 140 that are relevant to human beings. And of them, there's an overlap of 50 that apply to both. Okay, so let's start. Mishnah says, mumim elu, the above mumim that we had in the previous parak, bein kruin bein ovim, whether they're permanent or whether they're temporary, as long as the person has them, poslin by odom, they make a person possible a koyin to do the avodah. The yeser aleh, and then we have, in addition to them, we have a whole bunch that apply only to human beings. So number one, hakilon v'halachton v'hamachton. These are all different ones, v'sharosh shokot, skifat. These five are all various malformations of the head. We'll talk in Omer Beis. The Gemara will define each one of them, what they mean, some kind of misshaping of the head. Ubale chatrois, and also a person who has a hump on their back. Rabbi Yehuda Machshir v'cham poslin. Now, that last one, the Baalei Chatzeres, Rabbi Yehuda says it's not a mum, the person is kosher to do the avodah. The Chachamim say he's poslin. Another one, Hakereyah. We'll see on Amun Beis. We'll start discussing how we know all this. Hakereyah poslin. Next, a person who is bald is poslin. Ezehu kereach. Now, what's the definition of bald for this purpose? Kol she'ein lo shita sholseir mukhefet me'ozen lo'ozen. If he doesn't have at least one row of hair going around from ear to ear. In Yeshloi, but if he has that, Hareza kosher, then he is kosher, he's not considered a balmo.
So we'll see, you have
people who are just bald in front, you have people who have different degrees of baldness, you have people who almost their whole head, so we'll see in the Gemara exactly what kind of, where the hair has to be in order for him to still be kosher. Okay. So the Gemara starts up. First of all, Amai. Why do these things passel a person? Now, you have, there's a list of mumim that it mentions by people, by koyanim and parshas Ezra.
Did you try to correlate with the mumim in Hasidus and in spiritual?
No. Okay. So like this. You have a list of mumim that it says in parshas Ezra that make a person possible to do the avodah. Then later on in Parshas Emor, you have another list of mumim that make an animal possible to be brought as a korban. Besides that, we also have that it says specifically by Bechor, that it mentions Kiseyach or Iver, which we discussed in the previous text. So first, the question is, why are we saying that all of the mumim that apply to animals automatically apply to people? V'ho'ika yabelis, z'loiksiv v'raitiv adam. You have a yabelis, we mentioned in the previous parak, a wart or some kind of growth on the body with a bone in it or whatever. That, it mentions it only by animals. It doesn't mention it by people. So why would a yabelis possible person? The two dak tevalul and vice versa. You have dak and tevalul, which are things we mentioned in the previous parak, by animals. A dak was a cataract or a film or something over the eye. Tevalul, we said, is where there's something extending from the white into the black of the eye, so about the white and the black look mixed up. The loik sivi bebehema, those things it doesn't say by an animal. So why do those pass for an animal? Now Rashi explains, it's one thing. We have many mumim that we mentioned in the previous perek that it doesn't say explicitly in the pasuk. Fine, we learn those from Kol Mum Ra. But because in general, the Torah says, put a mum, also we said any mum that disfigures the animal. But we said, but dak and tvalo, you could argue, since the pasuk specifically only says them by a person and not by an animal, then maybe it only passes a person. So how do we know that they're interdependent like that? The answer is, melech yalfi mehadodi. We learn them from each other. We learn the mumim of people from animals and vice versa. The Tanya, as we learn in a braisa. But Adam lenemavo yabelis, by a person, it doesn't say that he's possible if he has a yabelis, a wart. But behema lenemadak tvalul, and by behema, it doesn't say that it's possible if it has a dak or a tvalul. Not, so one second. Minayin listen as omer shal zebezeve, to omer shal zebezeve. How do we know that we apply the mumim in the one list to the other, and vice versa? Talmud lema, gorov, gorov, yalefes, yalefes, l'gzeira shava. Therefore, you have, by both of them it mentions Gorov, and both of them it mentions Yalefes, which we learned in the previous parak that Gorov and Yalefes are various kinds of skin conditions. We said Gorov is dry, Yalefes is moist, whatever. The point is that it mentions it by both of them, therefore L'Gzeira Shava. Therefore, we have L'Gzeira Shava, and therefore it means that everything that's in one list applies to the other.
So Gorov and Yalefes is in both.
In both lists, exactly. Right. Okay, so the Gemara points out, Machmi. We have to say, for this Gzera Shava to work, it must be that the words are mufna. It must be that they're extra in the pasuk, that we didn't need them for the simple meaning of the pasuk. The Eloi Masni, because if it's not mufna, if there was a particular reason why it had to say it by a person, or a particular reason it had to say it by behema, Ekel Mifrach, then you'd be able to shlug up this Gzera Shava, which we know you can do. How would we slug it up? You would say, Adam mebehema lo yalef. You shouldn't be able to learn a person from an animal. Shekein hiyaf makreve legabe mezeach. Because after all, a behema has a bigger chumra. It itself is offered on the mezeach. So you would say, an Adam is not offered on the mezeach.
No, it's not offered on the mezeach.
That's the point. So a behema has a stringency. So you could say, maybe because the behema itself is offered on the mezeach, maybe therefore the Torah is more picky about mumim. That's how it works. When you try to slug up a zeta shava, it's based on logic like that. And behema may adam lo yalfa, and you shouldn't be able to learn an animal from a person. Shekein nisirab of a mitzvah, because after all, a person has an advantage over the animal that they have many mitzvahs that they have to keep, which animals don't. So therefore, the only way to make this zeta shava work would be if these words garav and yalefes are extra in both psukim. So is it? The Gemara says loy. Indeed, afnuye machni. Indeed, it's extra, and you didn't need it to say in the psukim. Why? Because like this, all the Torah had to mention is, by both of them, it could have mentioned Yalefes. it didn't have to mention Gorov, and we would realize on our own that Gorov is a moon. Because Umay Yalefis Dolim Isa, we would say Madoch E Yalefis, which is not so disgusting. No. We said before that a Yalefis maybe doesn't heal, but we said it's moist. It's moist on the outside of the wood. It's not most. It's not so disfiguring. Having Mumma, and yet it's considered a Mumma. Gorov, the moist, a Gorov, which is more meostic, because Rashi describes it, like we learned in the previous paragraph. It's hard like earthenware. It's sunken into the flesh. You have grooves over there. So that's what it is. So Gorov is, and in modern Hebrew, by the way, they use it.
Injuries one from the other.
That's the point. So that's what the Gemara is saying. In modern Hebrew, by the way, they use the word Gorov to mean eczema. I don't know if that's what it means over here, but it could be, because it does sort of fit Rashi's description over here. Whatever it is, anyway, the point is, so it could have only said Yalefes and not Gorov, and we would realize that if even Yalefes is a mum, how much more so Gorov, which is much more disfiguring.
Because
dry is deeper, you have deep crevices in the skin, yeah. So therefore, Gorov, the cost of Rahman al-Lamali. So why would the Torah write Gorov by both sides? Obviously, last name. Obviously, because it must be extra. So we have it for the Xer Shabbat. Okay. So the question still is, though.
It's obvious. It could be for something that we're not...
Tosfos points out, Rava had used before. We learned a couple of days ago that Rava had pointed out you have a comparison between Gorov, when it mentions Gorov to teach us a different thing, that only Chorot B'makom Basar, only if you have grooves in the flesh, where there's no bone underneath that's affected, only then it's only a moment of disfiguring that Gorov. Okay, Tosfos says, though, the fact of the matter is there we're not using the word Gorov to teach us something like Gorov itself. We're using, according to Rava, we're using the word Gorov to teach us the definition of Chorot, so that can't be considered that we needed the word Gorov for something else. So we're not using it Legufoy, Okay. So therefore, it's free, so therefore we have our Xer Shalom. Okay, so the question is, still, why are the Mumim divided? Some of them are in one and some of them on the other, and then we have Gorov and Yalefis to tie them together. Why didn't the Torah write all the Mumim by one of them, by either the person or the animal? The Gorov, the Yalefis, then write by the other one, write Gorov and Yalefis, and then they'll all learn from one. Why do we have the list of women is divided where some of them, aside from Gorov and Yalefis, where some of them are mentioned only by animals and some of them only by people? Why did the Torah do that?
What do you mean?
In other words, like this you have. By an animal, the Torah starts by a person first. So the Torah mentions that the person has a mum. The Torah starts mentioning ish iver episeach, echorum oisarua, person who's blind or lame, et cetera, et cetera. And it lists a dozen other mumim as well. Then in the next chapter, it mentions as far as animals that you can't bring as a korban averes, an animal that's blind, or shover, or that has a broken bone, or chorus, or it has a groove, or yabelas, etc. So the question is, why did it divide up the list like that and put some of them in one and some of them in the other? Like, for example, we started with the question, for example, why is yabelas possible by a person if it only says it by animals, and why is dak and tvalo possible by an animal if it only says them by people? So why pack it? So fine, we said the Xer Shabbat. But after all, why did the Torah do that? Why did it put some of them by animal and some of them by a person, and then we have to use the Xer Shabbat to learn one from the other? It should have given the whole list by a person or the whole list by an animal, and then it would have done Gorov and Yalefis. It could have said, for example, by person. It could have said if they're blind or lame or have a broken bone or a yabela, so this or that or the other, and then by behema, just say if it has a Gorov or Yalefis, and we make the Xer Shabbat, and we know everything that applies to the person applies to the animal. Instead, we have half of it by one and half of it by the other, and there's some overlap, but yeah. The reason is, the Gemara says, Aheya, which one do you want to say by? The Hey list of Rahman, which one did you want the Torah to give the whole list by? If it put the whole list of mumim by a person and only Gorov and Yalefis by the behema for the Xer Shabbat, have amina, then you would think like this: call the possible adam, possible behema. Okay, fine. Any mum that's relevant to a human being is also relevant to an animal. But kolot v'chotin. But what about you have the kolot that we learned in the previous parak, if the hooves are joined together, or chotin if you have something. if you have something missing in the gums of the animal. Delesnubadam, where there you don't have such things by people, because people don't have hooves. As far as the gums of a person are covered by their teeth, so the gum in the gums is not really visible. So therefore, you would argue with the Haman Namale Lipsalu. So you would think maybe they don't possibly an animal. So therefore, it had to write some of the Mumin by an animal. And vice versa, of listed Rahmana Kulub Behema, and if it only said all the Mumin by a Behema, and then by a person it only said God over Yalephus, then we would say the other way around. Have Amina called the possible Behema possible Adam. Fine, whatever possible is an animal, possible is a person. But Gibein Vacharum, but then we have some that are relevant only to people. For example, Gibein, where you have an issue with the eyelashes, not the eyelashes, but the eyebrows, rather, which we're going to talk on the base, what exactly the issue is. With Gibbon, animals don't have eyebrows. Another one is the Chorum, or a person who has a sunken nose, where the bridge of their nose is sunken. Again, an animal doesn't have its nose between its eyes, so the Mum of Chorum is not relevant to it. The Lesner Huber Behema, those you don't have by animals. If it didn't write them by a person, but Adam Nami Lelifsalu, then you would think it doesn't possible a person either. So of necessity, you'd have to say some Mumin by animals and some by people, because the fact is, there are some Mumin that apply only to animals and some that apply only to people. Okay. Fine, so the question is still v'lichtavinu rachmana kula b'chad. Fine, but still, the Torah could have put most of the list by one of them. V'hanach d'lesnehu b'idach, whichever ones are not relevant to that species, it would put by the other. So let's say, for example, by people, it would give the entire list of mumim that are relevant to people. Fine, it wouldn't mention kolot and it wouldn't mention chutim or whatever, because those are not specific to animals. So fine, those it would mention by an animal. And all the other ones it would have, so it would mention yabelos by people, if, for example. That's what it is on the face of it, yeah. Why not?
All of them for the Adam.
All of them for the Adam, let's say. And then they're the ones, yeah. And then you have a list of ones that are specific to animals, put by animals. And then, fine, put God of an Yalephus to tie them together with Xeda Shava. Why not that? The Torah should have written them all together in one place. Whichever ones are not relevant to that one, it would have written by the other one. And similarly, list of Rahman of Behema, or the Torah could have written the whole list by an animal, Bahanach the Lesnu Be'idach list of Ba'adam, and whichever ones are not relevant to an animal, it would write by a person, the God of the Yalefa Tacha V'Hosa, and then with the God of the Yalefa in both places, the Lelfi Mahadadi, and then we would have the Gzeir Shava. Why is the list split up that some things that are relevant to both of them are written only in one, for example, Yabelis, and other ones that are relevant to both of them are written only by one, like Dach and Tzah. So why is that? The answer is Ela Katana Dvei Rabbi Shmuel. No, rather the reason why it's done that way is just like Tana Dvei Rabbi Shmuel says. The Tana Dvei Rabbi Shmuel, Kol Parasha Shenamber V'Nishnis, whenever you have a parasha in the Torah that's said in one place and then repeated someplace else, Lo Nishnis Ela B'Shvil Davar Shenis Chadashbo. The only reason it's repeated is because you have some new detail that's mentioned in the second place that wasn't mentioned in the first place. So over here, in other words, the Torah is mentioning a list of Mumin by people. It's also mentioning a list of Mumin by animals. Of necessity, it had to list some that are relevant only to animals, by animals. Therefore, by the way, it also mentions some other ones that are relevant to people as well there also. Because once you're having to write the parasha again for the sake of the ones that are relevant only to animals, so it threw in a few over there that are relevant to people as well, and vice versa.
So it's not a
reboot. So it's not a matter
of complete.
So yeah, so like this, the list is split up in different places because anyway, the list had to be repeated. So once it's repeated, you can be adding in things that could have been written in the first place. Given that you have to write by a person, you have to write Gibbon and Chorum, and by an animal, you have to write Kolot and Chutin, then already there's no big deal if it also mentions only by an animal, Dak and Tvalol, or only by a person, Dak and Tvalol, and only by a Behema Yabelis. So once you're having to repeat the list, then you anyway can throw in things that could have been written in the other place.
But still, why do you need the second time occurrence of English?
So the fact of the matter is, you have mumim that don't apply to people and apply to animals. So you have to have a list again there. You have to have at least a short list over there that's going to include Gorov and Yalephus for the Gzeder Shava and Kolot and Chutin, which are specific animals. So once you have that, then you can throw in other things as well, even though they could have also been mentioned by people. Okay. Fine. Omar Rabba. So now Rabba says, okay, but we have a more basic question. Lomali dekosev rachmana mumba adam mumba kachim mumba b'chor. But why indeed does the Torah have to mention the whole concept of mumim that is three times, that is possible by a person and by all other korbanos and by a b'chor? fine. It had to list, we said it had to list the Moomin specific to people by people, the Moomin specific to animals by animals, but why each time does it have to mention the concept that you can't be offering a korban if you have a mum, and you can't bring a korban if it has a mum, and then it repeats it a third time by Bechor, that if it's Piseach or Iver, then you can't bring it as a korban, and then you sheft it. Why does it have to repeat that three times?
We just said some mumim specific.
Fine, but why does it have to say it a third time by Bechor? Bechor is a korban.
Okay.
So the reason is Tzricha. We need all of it.
That's the question?
Yes. De'i kasev rachmanam mum ba'adam, because if it only said the concept of mum by a person, we wouldn't be able to deduce from that it applies to animals, because we said before, you can't just have a mitzvah. So we said people have more mitzvahs. Adam mi'b'chur behem aloy asti, we also couldn't mention it only by b'chur and learn a person from it, shekein hu af mi'kar of l'gav mizveh, because the b'chur itself is offered on a mizveh. Kodshim mi'b'chur aloy asti, we couldn't learn other kodshim from b'chur, you could say shekein k'dushas mi'rechem, because the b'chur has an advantage over other kodeshim, it was kodesh from when it was born. Other kavanas are only kodesh when you declare them to be kodesh. And adam mi kodeshim la'asi, we couldn't have learned a person from kodeshim, that if we said kodeshim can't have a mum, neither can a person. Shekein hein asman kraven, because again, kodeshim themselves are offered on the mizbeach. Bechor mi kodeshim, as opposed to a person. Bechor mi kodeshim la'asi, we couldn't have learned bechor from kodeshim. Shekein kdushat them meroba, because other kodeshim have greater kdusha. Greater than the Mechor, in the sense that Rashi says, you have many other kinds of korbanos. You have chatos, oila, etc., whereas Mechor, there's only the one kind of korban. Also, there's another explanation that they have kedushas and meruba is, a Mechor, you only put its blood once on the Mizbeach. You throw it or you pour it once on the Mizbeach, according to the different opinions, whereas the other korbanos, you have all the other korbanos, or most of the other korbanos, so at least Shayim Shein Abba, at least two applications of blood. So therefore, so you couldn't have learned any one of them. The Bechor, you just, no. You have different opinions in Zvachim. Do you pour the blood onto the base of the Mizbeach, or do you dash it against the wall? From the Kaili. But either way, it's only one time. Whereas most other korbanos is at least two. So you can't learn any one of these three things from any of the others, and therefore would have to say by all of them. Okay, so the Gemara says, okay, so we couldn't have learned any one of them from any other one, because each one has something special. Casey Chodem is Hayki, but why shouldn't we say the Torah could have mentioned two of them, and we would have derived the third one by Mamasin. The Gemara says, Mehei Casey. No, because which one would you say shouldn't have had to be written? Let's go through the possibilities. So you only have three possibilities. So should we say that it didn't have to say it by Bechor and we could have derived it from the combination of Adam and other Kodshim? Can Malahanach Shekhen Kirshot and Meruba, because the other things have greater Kedusha, the person and the other Korbanos have greater Kedusha, and the Noeg and the Pshutim, and those things apply whether it's a Bechor or not. A person is a Kodshim, well, Pshutim means non-Bechor. A Koyin, whether he's a Bechor or not. Other Kodshim are Kodesh, whether they're a Bechor or not. A Bechor is limited only to the firstborn. So we can't learn Bechor from the other two. Loi lichtiv b'kodshim v'keisim ha'anach. Should we say it didn't have to say it by kodshim, and we would have learned from the other two, from Bechor in person? Can't malahanach shekein kedushas me'alehin? Can't both a person and the Bechor get their kedusha automatically? The person is kodesh as soon as he's born from a kohen and his wife. A kohen is kodesh as soon as he's born. A bechor is kodesh also as soon as he's born. Other kodeshim are not. Other kodeshim, you have to declare them to be kodesh.
We don't consider kodeshim.
No, well, there's different levels of kedusha. There's a kedusha of Yisrael, and then there's a higher level of kedusha that kohen has. Should we say it didn't have to say the concept of mumim by people, and we would have derived the basic concept from the two cases of kodshim and bechor? Can't malahanach shekein heinachman kriven legaber mizbeach. Both kodshim and the bechor are actually themselves offer on the mizbeach. People are not. Therefore, tzrichi. Therefore, we need all three of them. We couldn't have learned any one from any of the others.
Is it true that we say that tzarah keset kuna keset tzarah is higher than keset kuna?
In a certain sense, because as we say in Perek Vav, Perek Avos, yeah, that's the Gzoi Latorah, Yosem HaKonom HaMalchus, because it has 48 milos associated with it. All very good. The fact of the matter is that a Koyan has a certain higher level of Kedusha than Yisrael has. You have to have a mitzvah, the Kiddushah, you have to make them Kaddish. You give them the licorice, the Torah vision, you get the first Aliyah, when you have a choice who to give who to give the honor of leading benching. You give it to a Kohen.
To make him Kaddish? That's the reason?
The Kiddashka. You have a mitzvah, yeah.
Because he has greater
Kiddusha. Because he has greater Kiddusha? No. So because he has greater Kiddusha, therefore you have to honor that. Then we say, okay, so this is how we know ultimately that the mumim that apply to animals, whichever ones are relevant to human beings, also apply to human beings. Okay. Next, we said in the Mishnah, Yesra Le'en Ba'adim. We said then in addition, with people, you have another set of mumim that are unique to human beings. So, B'nohani Mili, where do we know that from? Some of them are only relevant to people and not to animals. We said, fine, those are mentioned in the Pesukim. But then you have other ones, like we had in our Mishnah, ones with misshapen head or whatever, where those on the face of it could be relevant to animals as well. Why are they only by people?
Right.
So Amar, and why are they Pesukim? Amar Rav Yechon, and the Amar Kroch, Kol Isha Shebi Mum Mizer Aaron. Because the Pesuk says, any man who has a mum from the descendants of Aaron. So the basic concept is, Sheshava Bizarre Shal Aaron. Ishashava Bizarre Shal Aaron. It has to be, that the person looks like the other regular descendants of Aaron. Meaning, in other words, Rashi says, the implication is like this. If a person resembles Zare Shal Aaron, if a person does not resemble Zare Shal Aaron, even if he doesn't have an actual full-fledged mum, nevertheless, he's excluded on that basis. If he has a full-fledged mum, then it doesn't matter whether, other than that, he looks like Zare Shal Aaron. The fact of the matter is, he has a mum. So it's one or the other. Either he has an actual mum of the kind that we mentioned in the previous paragraph, or he has something that makes him Einish of the Zare Shal Aaron.
So he's not allowed to serve
in the Mishnah. Serve in the Mishnah, right.
But are we on
the He can eat Korbanus. He was given a job in the Mishnah. Usually they gave him a job looking over the ward and taking out any wormy pieces. Nowadays, we have a mitzvah of honoring them as well. Okay. So this one asks, my ikur ben mum l'sheinu shava b'zara shel aron. Okay, what's the actual difference between whether the person has a mum or whether he just has a condition, like, for example, a misshapen head, which makes him einu shava b'zara shel aron? The difference is like this. Ikur mishum achulei avoida. The difference would be, if such a person went and did the avoida, would the avoida that he did be possible? Would it be mechulei? Meloshin chulei, yeah. Mumah machal avoda. If he has an actual mum, like the ones we mentioned in the previous perek, then his avoda is mechulal. Just give mum boy v'lo yichal, because it says he has a mum, and therefore he shouldn't serve, so he doesn't profane the avoda. Yeah, he would. We're going to talk about that in a second. But she'enish shava b'zare shal aron. But if he has a condition like a misshapen head that makes him enish shava b'zare shal aron, but which is not an actual mum, loy machal avoda, he does not make the avoda that he does possible. But the avoda that he did would be kosher.
So a mum, yes,
it's shava b'zare shal aron, no. So if he has, for example, to take examples from the previous parent, if he has, let's say, gorov or yalepes, and he does the avoda, it is possible, he will get malchus, yes, because he was over on, yes, but if he only has a condition that ain't a shava b'zare shal aron, then he's not mechalal avoda.
Such as what?
For example, a misshapen head, yeah. My ikabin.
Asaris would be,
in the previous parak, yeah. As far as Swiss Odom, maybe not. Swiss Chama, maybe not. Swiss Odom, a person who was sterilized by people, yeah, would be. My Ikabein Esha Eina Shava B'Zara Shal Aron Misham Maris Ayin. Now we have a third category, which we're going to mention. We're going to have an example of in the Mishnah at the bottom of this Amud, and we're going to have a few examples in our parak, where a person is possible because of Maris Ayin. So what's the difference between whether Eina Shava B'Zara Shal Aron versus Maris Ayin? The difference is Ikabein Ayu Esa. The difference is that a person who is Eina Shava B'Zara Shal Aron is over on a mitzvah's esseh, whereas a person who, he's not over on a lois esseh, fine, he doesn't get malchus, but he is over on a mitzvah's esseh.
Which says?
The Tosuk says that only Zare Shal Aron should serve, and like this, he's not Shava B'Zara Shal Aron, so therefore he's being over on a mitzvah's esseh. On the other hand, the ones that are Mifnei Maris Ayin, there's not even an esseh. No, he's not allowed to, but there's no particular esther that he's being
ordered.
Such as because it's misnamed Maris Ayin, because the Chacham said he shouldn't be serving.
Which one?
We're going to have an example at the bottom of the Almud, for example. We have a person's eyelashes fell out, is one example. There's an example where he's possible misnamed Maris Ayin. The Rambam has a different understanding of this, by the way, because apparently the Rambam had a different girsa in the Gemara over here. The Rambam learned that in the first two cases, he is going to get malchus, unlike we're saying, according to Rashi and then the Girsa we have in front of us, the second case, where it's Ein Shava B'Zara Shal Aron, he's not getting malchus. The Rambam learned that he is getting malchus in both cases, just in the first case, he's Mechal Avoda, and in the second case, not. I think also the Rambam says actually that even the ones that are named Maris Ayin, I think the Rambam says he also gets Malchus.
What about an albinos?
An albino, we're going to talk about in our paragraph. We're going to get you. Okay, fine. Okay, so now let's start defining the ones that we mentioned in our Mishnah. The first one we said was Kiloi. So what is that? The Domi Reshe La'achla means that his head resembles an achla. Rashi describes an achla is the lid of a barrel. So it's pointed towards the top and wider at the bottom. So therefore we're talking about a person whose head is pointier on top and it widens and it yeah, it's sort of like a roof. Yeah. That's kilo, and it's considered a mum.
That's from birth, it has to be, or not?
It's not the fascist. I mean, I don't know. I guess it could be from birth, or it could be if his head was misshapen while he was a baby, if he wasn't bundled up right or whatever. I don't know. Okay. The next one we said in the Mishnah was lifton or lifta. What does that mean? The dummy ratio that got delivered to lifta means that his head resembles the head of a turnip, which is that Rashi describes that it's wide and then it narrows towards the bottom.
The bottom is where it
was thin. Yeah, where you have the root comes out at the bottom of it. So therefore, yeah. The tonne, and we learn a price of a savore oimed be'emtaroshay. His neck is in the middle of his head, meaning usually you have the neck is not in the middle of the head. Usually the head sticks out more in the front. Yeah. So over here, does this mean you have different mephoshim understand? Is this mentioning an extra mum? Is it saying that if his head is shaped like a turnip or if his neck is in the middle of his head, or is it describing it's another detail in it? When is it considered that his head looks like a turnip if his neck is in the middle of his head? Okay.
Next for animal.
No, we're talking for human beings. Then we said the next one was makron in the Mishnah. That means the domi racial makron. That means his head resembles a makron, which Rashi describes as a kurdum, an axe. Meaning Rashi says that the back of his head is rounded and narrow. Like normally the back of the head is a broad. So like this, in other words, it's more pointed like that. Yeah, there's another explanation, which I think the Rambam says, is that his head looks more like a hammer, like it sticks out too much in front or something. Okay. Then we said, v'sharosh is shokut. We said if his head is shokut, so what does that mean? You'll look fun. That means in the front. That's what we have to figure out. So Rashi says so middle fun of it means in front of him. Which Rashi describes, it means that his head in the front is sloped. So, in other words, a regular person has more or less a vertical forehead. So this person is like those old pictures of Neanderthals where he has like a very slanted forehead. So that's called shokut. The Rambam has a different understanding of it a little bit. The Rambam seems to understand shokut means more like melosh shakua, like sunken in. The Rambam describes that you have a person like where there seems to be like there's like a cavity at the top of his head as if like somebody pushed it in from the top. Or skifas, and then the Mishnah also mentioned a person who skifas is possible, that would be me'achorov. That would be where it's misshapen from the back, where the same kind of thing as shokot, to actually say, means that it's sloped in the front, where like as if a piece is missing in the front. Skifas would be the same kind of thing in the back. Usually you have the opposite parts over there. So like this, you have, instead of it being rounded from top to bottom, it's like slanted downwards. And why do we call that skifas? Kida amri inchi shokot pisa. Like people use the expression, a piece was taken away. So shokul pisa, you combine those two words together, you get the word skifa. Shokul pisa, skifa, skifas, whatever, yeah. Okay. Tana, we learn in a braise, so there's more mumim that weren't mentioned in the Mishnah. The tzavor is shokut v'shomut. Another one is also if his neck is shokut or shomut. So what does that mean? Shokut means the chavya machla. Shokut means if his neck is hidden, so he looks like, you know, his head is directly on his shoulders, looks like he has no neck. That would be called shokut. And shomut, what would be shomut that would make him possible? The oruch v'shomut is the other way around, where his neck looks really long and it looks like his head doesn't like his head doesn't belong on his shoulders at all. So those are also considered mumim, and those, you know, like a long, neck. Yeah. Okay. Then we said in the Mishnah, so far all of those everybody agreed on that they're mumim. Then we said in the Mishnah of Bale Chatzeros, if a person has a hump on his back, we said Rabbi Yehuda Choler, Rabbi Yehuda said he's kosher, the chum said he's possible. So, the if, they ask them if that hump has a bone in it, meaning like he has a misaligned vertebra or something, to call omelets, pleaded apostle. And there's no argument. Everybody would agree, even Rabbi Horda, that he's possible. He pleaded the less they ask him. The machlokas is when there's no bone in it. So there's no misaligned vertebra, but he has a hump of flesh on his back. So, mar sova ho'ena shavu. When there's bone, for sure he's possible. When there's no bone, mar sova ho'ena shavu bazar shalaron. So the chachamim say he's possible, because after all, he's not like the regular sons of Aaron. Doesn't matter. Umar Sova, whereas Rabbi Huda holds, it's not a problem because Karkura de Bisraba Almu. It's just a lump of flesh. There's nothing. We're not worried about that making him any shogar bizarre as well. Yeah, Chachicha Shabbat there. So, yeah. The halacha is like a hachamim, of course, so therefore a hump on his back disqualifies him, whether it's a misshapen, whether it's a misaligned vertebra or not. Then we said in the Mishnah, Kereach Posel, we said a bald person is Posel, but we said if he has a row of hair from ear to ear, then he's kosher. So what does that mean? Omar Rava, loishonu ela she'ein lo la'achra v'yesh lo l'fonu. When is the Mishnah saying that he's possible is if he doesn't have any hair on the back of his head going around the back of his head from ear to ear, v'yesh lo l'fonu, but he only has hair on the front going from ear to ear. That would be when he's considered possible. So to have like that, where you have the whole rest of his head is bald and there's only one row of hair going from ear to ear, that looks really bad. Yeah, well, okay. Avo yeshle la'achrav kosher, but Rava would say if that one row of hair goes around the back of his head from ear to ear, kosher, then it would be kosher. But even if he has in the front, even if it's all the way around the circumference of the head, he has a row of hair, that would still be kosher. The important thing is that he has hair on the back of his head from ear to ear. How much more so he'd be kosher if he only has hair in the back and not in the front, which looks even more normal. So in other words, the Rava would say he's possible if he's completely bald. He's also possible if he's completely bald except for one row of hair in the front from ear to ear. But if he has hair in the back from ear to ear, then he's kosher regardless whether he has hair in front or not. That would be, we were talking, this is Rava's understanding of the Mishnah. Of the Chachamim, well, we didn't have any other opinion in the Mishnah. We had Rabbi Yehuda and the Chachamim argue about the Baalei Chatzei Teres. We said they agreed about the Kereach, they agreed about the bald person. The Ika de Masniya Sefer, now that's one version of Rava. Another version is that Rava was referring not to the Reisha, where he has no hair, but rather to the Sefer, where the Sefer had said, Vim Yeshloi Hareza Kosher, that if he has hair from ear to ear, then he's kosher. So in the second version, Rava is saying, Omar Rava, Loishonu Ela She Yeshloi La'achra Ve'ein Loi Lefonov, when is he kosher? Only if he has the hair in back, but none in front. Avo yeshle ben la'achra ben lafon of fossil, but according to the second version, the Mishnah would be implying if he had a hair all the way around, in back and in front, fossil, then he would be fossil. The first version is that if it's all the way around, he's kosher. And if it's only in the back, it's also kosher. Only if it's only in the front, would it be fossil. The second version is that no, if it's all the way around, he's fossil. V'choshekin sheyeshle lafon of ein la'achra, how much more so if he only has it in front and not in back.
Both versions, when he doesn't have it in the back, it's fossil.
Right, but in the first version, if he has all the way around, he's kosher, and in the second version, he's possible. In the second version, he's only kosher if it's only in the back, not in the front.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. The halach, the Rambam paskins like the second, lotion, as he usually does. So therefore, that's the halacha. If the kohen has hair going from the back from ear to ear, then he's okay. But if he has it in front, if he has it in front or all around, then no good. No. Okay. So the question is, or the aim like cloud apostle. If he doesn't have it at all, then he's also apostle. Okay. Now, Amar of Yechanan. So Rav Yechanan says, Hakachonin, people who are bald, Vahananothin, and people who are unusually short, Vahzavlagonin, and people who are Zavlagonin. Now Rashi describes that means that the person is constantly tearing. So they asked a question on that in the previous parak. We learned about a similar condition with animals. Here we're focusing specifically on mumim that apply only to people. So in that case, then this would be a mumim shared by animals and by people. It's a different category, we said before. Okay, but nevertheless, we mentioned it before by animals. Now we're mentioning it by people. The one answer is, okay, maybe there's a difference. Maybe over there there's more. Maybe over there it actually affects his vision and here not. But okay, there's a difference. Rabbeinu Gershom, maybe because of that, has a different explanation, has two different explanations. One is that zavodonin means the person who always has, he always has like green stuff, like the crusty stuff that you have in your eyes when you wake up in the morning. It's called listlust, so he has a discharge in his eyes. That's Rabbeinu Gershom's first explanation. The second explanation is that he's always drooling, that his lips are loose and he drools. The Rambam accepts that definition, and because the Rambam says a person who drools is considered a Balmum. So Rabbi Yochanan says all of these
psulim.
No, we're not talking about when they're asleep. We're talking about when a person is awake. Yeah, okay, so then it would be possible because of that. Okay, so all of them, Rabbi Yechanan says, apostle, because again, such a person is not similar to the other descendants of Aaron. So the question is, why does Rabbi Yechanan need to tell us that? People who are bold, we said in our Mishnah. Our Mishnah already mentioned bold people. People who are short, we also have in our Perek, we're going to learn that people who are unusually short are apostle. So what's Rabbi Yechanan's Chiddush? We know the Mishnah. The answer is Zavodgonin, it's Yerushalayim. Yes, but Rabbi Yochanan has to mention it because of the Zavodgonin. Once he's mentioning those, then he mentions a couple of others as well. It's Yerushalayim Lashmin, and he had to inform us that the Zavodgonin apostles, the people whose eyes tear, or who have crusty stuff in their eyes, or who drool, whatever, yeah. Because Umaud came and Mishumar... No, well, whether permanently or not, as long as it's going on, then... Now, why does he have to tell us? Because otherwise we would have thought that maybe these things are apostle only because of Maris Ayin, and which is a different category. We said before that it's not even an Isser Aseh. So no, Rabbi Yochanan wants to tell us that it is actually considered Eina Shalva Bezara Shalarim. So therefore he's at least over on an Esseh, and according to the Rambam on a Lois Esseh as well. Well, that's what, right. Okay, so the question is, what do you mean? You don't have to. Rabbi Yochanan doesn't have to tell us that these three mumim are possible as ena shalva bezara shalayin, which we would have thought maybe it's only maris ayin. Whenever you have a mumim or perek, which is only because of maris ayin, the Tana tells us so. It explicitly says, for example, in the Mishnah at the bottom of our Amud, b'shenoshru rifei enav, it mentions over there that if a person's eyelashes fall out, posel mepnei maris ayin, so he's posel because of maris ayin.
Yeah.
So we know for a fact which ones are maris ayin and not. Why does Rabbi Yochanan have to tell us? The answer is ma'u detema, fine, but you still might have thought, toni chodav hu adin l'kulu, you might have thought, okay, so the Mishnah mentions one thing, that's mepnei maris ayin, maybe there are other things in the perek that are also maris ayin. So therefore, Rabbi Yochanan wants to tell us that no, it's not maris ayin, it's ena shalva bezara shalayin. So the question is, that still doesn't work. Wherever you have something, it's not just one time in our parak that it says mipnei maris ayin. Whenever you have something which is maris ayin, mi hadarum misna kahadu ratani, it explicitly repeats it over again in the Mishnah. For example, later in the parak, we have b'shenit lushina of kosel mipnei maris ayin, a person whose teeth are gone is kosel because of maris ayin.
In the Mishnah,
it says that. So every time there's something that's Maris Ayin, if it's specifically labeled as Maris Ayin, so what does Rabbi Yochanan have to tell us? No, the reason why Rabbi Yochanan had to give us this list of three things and tell us that there ain't a shava bizarre shalaron is to tell us not like the following braisa. The Tanya, as we learn a braisa, hakarchonin v'hananotin v'azavagonin, these three, bald people, short people, and zavagonin, Sherim, they're all kosher technically to do the avodah. V'loy omru posel elam shem maris ayin. They're only posel because of maris ayin. So Rabbi Yochanan wants to tell us, never mind that braisa. The halacha is it's not a matter of maris ayin. It's a matter of einu shalva bezara shalayin, which is a greater degree of soul.
So not because of maris
ayin. Not because of maris ayin, which would be the least worst situation, but rather because einu shalva bezara shalayin, which is the second. Okay, so the question is man hai tana. Fine, who is the tana of that braisa? The answer is Rabbi Yehuda. That's according to Rabbi Yehuda. The tana, Rabbi Yehuda, Omer, ha koinim, when the prophet says the koinim can do the avodah, l'rabba, it's a sakarchonim, he says that comes to include bold koinim.
Why do we have to know who is the braisa?
We want to know. We're saying that Rabbi Yochanan is telling us, don't follow this braisa. We want to know which tana holds that bold people and then short people and whatever would technically be kosher for the avodah. And the answer is Rabbi Yehuda learns from a prophet. He learns that the word ha koinim includes people who are bold.
But that's not the halacha.
The halacha is not like that, though. The halacha is that they're possible not just because of Maris Ayin, they're possible because of Eina Shalva Bezara Shalayim. Which means, again, according to Rashi, they're over on an Esser, they're just not Mechal, they're over on an Esser, they're just not Mechal Avoida. According to Rashi, there's no, according to Isser Esser, there's no Malchus. According to the Rambam, there's Malchus for Ein Shal of the Zayashal. But the Rambam learned that the Rambam had a different view there, and that the top of the Amud, that the difference between them is not an Esser, but rather a Lois Esser.
Oh,
okay.
From his
Gersa. Okay.